Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We are joined once again by the wonderful Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ and, of course, over at acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, great to be chatting with you, my friend. How are you doing?
Doing good. The early bye week is weird. I feel like antsy. I like dug into like some college centers earlier this week. Been watching baseball. Don't usually do that, especially before like the World Series. So that's been fun. Brew crew. They lost today. That stinks. They did.
It was not fun. They had opportunities, started brutally, and then
brutal.
A lot of yes, as bad as it gets for a start of the game. But like they like just always find ways to like peck away at the lead, and like they're just going to get back into it. And then obviously had opportunities in the eighth for sure, and just couldn't get there. It happens when teams are desperate. It's tough to put teams away like that. So hopefully they don't have to get to a game five back in Milwaukee and can just put it away on Thursday. But yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, I'm rooting for you guys because I have no rooting interest in baseball. So
what is the team of choice in the like Portland, Oregon area? Is it like the Mariners or
kind of, yeah, I guess. But like Portland and Seattle aren't that close. Like,
no, I know.
Let me see how many miles it is. All right, my internet's going slow. We're not going to be doing that. it's probably like a 3-hour drive.
From
Portland to Seattle on game day. It's not, but there's also like not a lot of people going to those games from Portland. So, yeah, we're kind of like in the middle of nowhere where it's like, all right, pick whoever the heck you want. Where'd you come from? That's probably who you're going to root for because a lot of people aren't lifers. So
it says 2 hours and 59 minutes, almost exactly 3 hours from Seattle to Portland. So, yeah, you were
spot on. There's going to be traffic at the joint military base every single time. I promise. I-5 is a mess there.
Does not sound fun. All right. So speaking of moving from one place to another, look at this segue. This is my best of all time. Joe Flacco, of course, this week moves from one team to another, going from Cleveland to Cincinnati. Obviously, Joe Flacco beat Green Bay single-handedly in that game. And by that, I mean the defense did all the work and Flacco did next to nothing. But thoughts on Flacco, the Cincinnati Bengal?
I think it makes sense for Cincinnati. Like, obviously, Browning wasn't the answer. I don't think Rippon was the answer.
No. They cut
Mike
him.
Did White was that? On the practice squad. Yeah. To make room for him. They cut Mike White from the practice squad, too. They kept Sean Clifford. I don't think any of those guys are going to be the answer if you still want to hold on to this whatever grasp of, you know, Joe Burrow will be back for the Super Bowl type narrative thing that they want to keep pushing. So I guess that makes sense for the Browns. Like, I guess you still have a vet in the room in Deshaun Watson, but like you got two rookies in there. And
is he in the room?
I think so. Well, I think Deshaun's camp is like, we will be ready to start in December is like the line out of Deshaun's camp. So
I just thought that whole thing was done after the owner said something to the effect of like, yep, we made a huge mistake. What a dumb move that was and owned it. I don't know. That's interesting. I did not realize. I thought he was just like gone and forgotten at this point.
No, he wants to come back. So whether they let him or not, we'll see. But it's something that they want. Now the Browns are like, we don't even know if Shadur is going to be the backup. It might be Bailey Zappe. And I'm like,
this is the most Browns thing ever.
What type just of? Dude, how do you guys trip and fall into this? You guys, come on.
It's remarkable.
Have a plan.
The Browns are the gift that just keeps giving. Like, I don't know how, like you said, how they stumble into some of these scenarios of like, we're going to draft Gabriel in the third, but then we're going to draft Shadur later. but we also have Flacco. We also have Billy Zappi. Deshaun Watson still hanging around
in the offseason.
Pickett in the offseason. Just a remarkable situation. Just literally throwing blind darts at a dartboard at this point.
Quarterbacks are assets, baby. That's what the GM said when they asked him about that. Ivy League grad GM. I don't expect Flacco to like play out of the world. You're not going to see a lot of crazy analysis on my end from the Flacco thing. It's mostly what people have been saying since the trade happened, where it's like, well, Flacco is better than Browning. Okay. That's a low bar. He didn't play well versus Cleveland. Okay. We all saw that. Well, he's got better receivers in Cincinnati. We're very aware of that situation. But hey, his offensive line is like the only offensive line worse than the Browns. And it's like, yep, thumbs up on all of these. I think all these narratives are correct right now.
Correct.
I don't think the line has moved. I think it opened at 4.5 and it hasn't. Yeah. So
14.5.
It's going to be. Did I say 4.5? 14.5.
I think you just said 4.5, but 14.5. 4.5 would have me a whole heck of a lot more concerned.
Yeah. No. I still think it's going to be tough for him, especially a road environment. Matt LaFleur was talking about in his press conference, I think today, was bringing up like just like the signals and the cadence and all that stuff is going to be a little tick behind, and you're going into a road environment in that type of situation. If you're at Lambeau, please get loud on third downs. That would be great.
I got you covered. I'll get the stands for this one. I got you covered. I will single-handedly make all the noise.
Attaboy. Speaking of like weird hand signal stuff, I was watching the Jags Chiefs game.
Yeah.
And when Lawrence is like checking at the line, so you know, all the receivers, all the offensive linemen turned toward Lawrence to see what he's saying. Travis Hunter is looking to the sideline. So they're having to signal everything in from the sideline for Travis to even figure that stuff out. I thought he was in the offensive meetings and stuff like that.
Apparently, yeah, I thought so too.
I know they said that they did that in Colorado, where they were just like basically rolling them out on game day and were just flashing them signs and stuff. I guess that's continuing at the NFL level. I don't know. Weird stuff is happening in the league.
If you just had 11 guys to signal to each person, you wouldn't even need a play call. You could just have 11 guys on the sideline telling each person what to do. You're all set.
Yep. And, you know, college coaches, if you look at their sidelines before, all right, I guess they got the green dot now. But before then, I mean, you'd have all the guys in the multicolored vests poster and board. All that stuff. Poster boards, yeah. Do you know the story of the poster boards?
I don't think I do.
So, Frost spilled the beans. So Scott Frost, he ended up being the head coach at Central Florida and then Nebraska. Now he's back at Central Florida. He was the OC under Chip, or under Helfrich, but he worked under Chip, I think is how it worked. And he said in one of the clinics that I saw that it was actually a ploy from them. The boards for years didn't do anything. They just put like ESPN announcers and stuff on it because they know that the cameras would catch them. So while the cameras are filming the boards, guys halfway down the sideline are the guys who are doing the hand signals and stuff. So you couldn't match the game copy with the film and figure out, you know, what was getting signaled in and stuff. So that's fun. They ended up using like, he said, like at the end, they started using them for like fastballs and stuff like that when they were going no huddle. It was just a bunch of BS.
That's amazing. I was actually going to say, I hope what you're going to tell me is that they're just completely fake, but I didn't have the conviction to say it. And then they were completely fake. So that is beyond amazing. So Joe Flacco aside, which again, I'll be honest. I thought the line would have moved from like 14.5 to like, I don't know, maybe 13, 12.5. I thought there would have been like a small move. It hasn't. There's so much wrong with this Cincinnati team that has not even anything to do with the quarterback, much less the quarterback. And you have Flacco, old, not exactly seen everything super well anyway, now with a worse offensive line that barely knows the system. It doesn't feel like a great situation for success for him. But if you're looking at this game, as you're watching it early on, what are you kind of watching for? What are the potential stumbling points if you're Green Bay?
It seems like the offensive line should be relatively healthy. in this game, Packers wise, right? So yep. We get Banks back in practice. We get Tom back in practice. Belton is still out. Matt said that it was not going to be a long-term injury. We are now going on, like, we're on week three of this now, yep. Right? So it was Wednesday high ankle, though? Of the Cowboys. Yeah.
Was it? Yeah. I yeah. So, I mean, that's like a 4-week thing usually, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So we'll see.
I guess so. You know, Wyatt's still out in practice. They said that that's a week to week thing. We'll see what happens there. I'm still pretty worried about defensive tackle depth and have been since we've rostered everyone's favorite member of the 53 man roster. This year, Stackhouse at the cutdown deadline, he had I believe a 20 grade from Pro Football Focus. It was the lowest grade by any individual in any game this season for the Packers. It's not been good. He had to play like 50% of the snaps. Once Wyatt went down, Wyatt's still not in practice. I reserve the right to be worried about that situation, but the Bengals offensive line is banged up and truly horrible. You'll see a lot of the pass rush win rate stuff because I think that's the easiest stuff to quantify. If you look at their yards per carry, they're like dead last in the league, dude. They are the worst team at running the football too. So it's not just a pass blocking thing with them. It's across the board. They are bad up front. Defensive line, they're not very good either. They don't get TFLs. I haven't checked the stats again this week, but before this week, Trey Hendrickson was leading the team with like 2 TFLs, which is crazy at this point in the year. So it's just, you know, sort of a one-man band on their defensive front. So that we should be able to win the line of scrimmage. My biggest worry is on the injury report this week, we have Nate Hobbs still out with a concussion. So he's still in the protocol, you know, going on to week 2. That's a little bit concerning, right? Yep. I know he was practicing a limited participant.
Limited, right?
Yeah. He's limited, but he's still in the protocol.
Yep.
I would think that, you know, this week is a little bit different than what we've I guess you could say that like the Lions were like this too. But with 2 receivers that could actually like move around and stuff, where it's no longer it's not where is Terry McLaurin lining up? Oh, when he's in the slot, you know, be cognizant of that, right?
Yeah.
Now we got 2 of these guys, right? And then they use Mike Gesicki in the slot too, and Noah Fant, and they throw balls at those guys too. So you would think that if there was any game where you wanted to have Hobbs play in the slot and have CV and Nixon play outside and just live in that world and say like, Bullard, hey, this just isn't your game, right? Yep. It would probably be this one. And you know, if Hobbs is off the table because of that, that'd be a little concerning. Plus there's a lot of like numbers that people are running now about like efficiency, like post concussion, and you could like correlate it to like body movement stuff and like re-injury rates for like lower body injuries, right? So like, if you get a concussion, you're way more likely in like the next 4 weeks to then have like a lower body injury because you're like equilibrium isn't like set up right. Right. Yeah. I mean, this is stuff I just learned this off season. Right. But Hobbs wasn't playing good before the concussion. And if he comes back and he starts outside and, you know, goes through the protocol and all that stuff, and, you know, maybe his equilibrium isn't fully right, you're going against T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. That's a level of exposure. I don't know if that wins you the game. I don't know if that makes up for the 14.5 point spread, right? But it's certainly not the best position to be in. So it probably looks something like that, right? Like the star wide receiver is going off, Andy. That's the analysis I'm bringing to you this week.
No, but it's legitimate. And based on what George Pickens did to the corner room, you're like, well, they've kind of got a couple of those guys that are capable of doing some of that stuff. And now you've got a quarterback in Joe Flacco that you know is just going to give them some jump ball opportunities every now and again because he might not have any other choice. It's either going to be obliterated by the Packers defensive line because his line can't block up front, or yeah, I guess just, you know, throw it up for grabs. I could see in this game some jump ball opportunities. So yeah, I know it's like kind of the lowest hanging fruit, but I also think it's the most appropriate analysis in this game of, hey, and I think the weird odd thing about this one is if you look at what Dallas really had success. Now, Dak was awesome. Joe Flacco's not Dak, yeah. And I'm not concerned about any of that aspect, but it was George Pickens is like the first receiver in a while that had the ability to kind of tear through this secondary. Well, again, they kind of have that. And again, I'm not saying Trey Hendrickson is Myles Garrett, but Myles Garrett, that Browns defensive line gave Green Bay's offensive line a lot of trouble. They didn't, you know, there's a lot of nuance to that I'm obviously not going into super great detail, but there's a couple things that the Browns and Cowboys did that if there are two things that, in fact, it's the only two things Cincinnati has is a couple wide receivers like Pickens and a defensive end that's really freaking good. And yeah, like mitigating those two things is pretty much the game. If you do that, Cincinnati has no other fastball to throw. It's kind of that or nothing. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. So don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Green Bay had a bye in week 5, but it's time to get back in the swing of things as Green Bay set to take on Cincinnati in week 6. Not only that, we have some marquee matchups with Tampa hosting San Fran and KC hosting Detroit. So it's a great time to get back on Prize Picks and get your winning started today. This week, I'm going with a big game from Josh Jacobs, a bounce back performance from Justin Herbert, and a Josh Allen beatdown in Atlanta. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Josh Allen passing yards, more on Josh Allen rushing yards, more on Josh Allen touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/Packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code Packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/Packaday and use the code Packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code Packaday.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think Xavier McKinney even said in the locker room after practice today, and he was like, you know, what do you think is going to happen with these receivers? And he's like, they're going to throw it up. Because like, they're just going to give them a chance. So I would like, you know, in wrestling, you get the money in the bank briefcase and you get to like cash it out. I would like to cash out the Xavier McKinney interception this week. I think this is a great opportunity for it. If they're going to throw deep, let's get a second, right?
It would be nice. This one could actually matter because that one did not matter at all. In fact, it would have been better if he probably just knocked that thing down rather than picking it off because it was fourth down anyway. But I digress. Yeah, I'll take a Xavier McKinney pick. I've talked about too, like, one of the things I'm excited about, this team's going to get turnovers at some point. Like, they have a great pressure rate. Pressure usually induces turnovers. Halfley specifically talked about how much more they're punching at the ball this year than they were at any point in 2024. Like, eventually that's going to lean into fumbles and hopefully fumble recoveries. But it just hasn't happened. 2 turnovers so far. And again, one of them has been that Xavier McKinney basically like arm punt before halftime by Flacco. So they just haven't generated them so far. They're going to come. I have no doubt about that. But this week would be a nice week to kick that off.
They've played some pretty good quarterbacks too, right?
Yeah. Like
Goff, Dak, Jane Daniels. They don't They don't throw you a lot of balls that you can intercept. Like the only, and I might be missing some, but like there was the Quay early one in the season that he ended up dropping, right? But outside of that, I can't remember how many other interception opportunities they've even had.
No, the Evan Williams one that stood against the Lions, the Xavier McKinney one that actually happened again was just an arm punt basically. And then, Quay had the drop at the end of, was that the, see the Lions or the Commanders game? I forget which one it was, but it was one of
the first two games. Yeah, for sure.
I don't remember which one it was, but had that one. And I think that's, I can't remember any other opportunity where they've really even had a chance at a turnover, which is again, pretty wild.
Yeah, but they'll probably come. And if you get this Bengals team in a passing script, I mean, I would like to take my chances on a Flacco interception off of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So like 4 days of prep, technically, you know, I'm not counting Sunday. So
By the way, not that this is here nor there, nor probably really matters in this entire scheme of things. How do you not get that deal done on Monday? Like if you're like, it couldn't have been like that far off on Monday. You like every day in a game week where you're going to start them anyway, would seem to matter a little bit. Maybe it doesn't, but it just feels like, how do you not get that deal done on Monday?
I don't know. But like on Monday, he was still like, Zach Taylor was still talking about like, we just reviewed the film.
Yeah.
We're going to like consider our personnel options. Like, I don't know. I guess that stuff is, you know, you got to let that whole
process
play out. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose. As far as going back to Wyatt for a second, where are you at this? I'm assuming like the only other option outside of the four that they have would be Esther off the practice squad. I can't imagine that's going to be anything that's probably in their wheelhouse at the moment. So I'm assuming they're going to go with four guys, assuming Wyatt can't play. Stackhouse and Brinson, the two rookies, and I'm assuming Brooks and Wooden are going to be your starters. Again, it's not great, but how comfortable against Cincinnati's not great offensive line do you feel?
I mean, we're going to find out, right? I mean, Stackhouse really didn't get a look against first team offensive lines until the season started. So he was kind of an unknown coming in. You guys got to remember, like, he was like the fifth, sixth defensive tackle on the depth chart in the preseason. Yep. Like, they gave Brinson way more snaps against first team offenses than they gave Stackhouse. So I think they learned a lot about what Stackhouse has to offer. I would think in this game, Brinson is going to get more snaps because that's just the type of player Brinson is. Like, I think so I think Stackhouse is coming into this game and they're going to have the same game plan for Stackhouse that they entered the first 4 weeks of the season, which is, it would be great if you played like 10 to 12 snaps in short yardage and red zone looks. Yep. Right. And Brinson is going to be more of like the third defensive tackle.
So basically, Brooks becomes Wyatt and Brinson becomes Brooks.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm expecting. Obviously, they can make a different decision. Like, I didn't expect Xavier Williams to be the kick returner and Matthew Golden be the punt returner when they haven't done that all preseason. I can be wrong here, but I'm expecting Brinson to be DT3 and then Stackhouse to kind of keep that same role as the, you know, short yarded run stopper type of guy, even though he didn't play the run very well against the Cowboys.
True story. Since we're talking about some of the injuries and how they could affect this, obviously the big news this week is Christian Watson coming back off the PUP list, opening up the 21-day window, practiced in pads on Wednesday. I'm assuming he does not play this week. I'm not saying it's 1,000,000% for sure, but I don't know. It's an interesting, I would think there'd be a ramp up, a little bit more individual, maybe some team, but what are you thinking with Watson?
I could see it going either way. I don't think that they need all the receivers that they have right now. Like, they're not really using Malik Heath on special teams. Again, because I think he's just a chess piece that they're going to move on from at some point. So I don't think they want to get comfy with Malik Heath being out there on like kick return as a blocker. So like, if you wanted to make, you know, split those Malik Heath snaps on offense between Christian Watson and, you know, give him a soft launch into this thing and, you know, maybe an uptick for Xavier Williams' snaps, I could see that happening. It was interesting to me they brought up Monk for the designated to return guy. I kind of thought it was going to be like Lloyd or something else, but you know, they have two open roster spots right now too, and they've held those for weeks at this point. I think well, when they called up Brant Banks, they were down to one open spot for a little bit. But I mean, they've been holding these two spots for call-ups from the injury list for weeks now. So
yeah, I'll be interested to see if they do actually activate him. Let's say he is active for this game. What would be your sort of role that you would use him? Just 10 to 12 snaps, deep guy, a couple, you know, intermediate throws here or there.
Yeah. Outside receiver. If you want to use him to block and stuff like that, go for it. I can't imagine that they'd be giving him like jet sweeps or anything like that. But I mean, weeks ago, probably, you know, over a month ago at this point, they were like, yeah, he's running full speed at like 23 miles an hour or whatever the heck it was. Right. So who knows how ready he is. I wouldn't be surprised by anything at this point. Like Stephon Diggs is coming back like crazy this year. So
the way he's playing is absolutely unreal. I mean, when I saw the Patriots give him that contract, I'm like, dude, he just came off an ACL and you're going to give him, like, he's not young anymore. You're going to give him that deal. And I'm like, all right, I guess I kind of see why you gave him that deal now. He looks phenomenal.
He's on pace for like 1400 yards or something crazy. Like that.
Yeah, smart move by them, I guess, assuming he doesn't get re-injured or something. Let's talk about this, because there are a couple of wide receivers out there that I know you have brought up as some potential options for maybe Green Bay to look at. One of them I'm a little bit more interested in than the other. Let's start with Velus Jones, who was a wide receiver, kind of slash running back-ish, slash kick returner, punt returner, just let go from the Saints, if I remember correctly. And he would obviously give them both some kick return and punt return juice. Thoughts on potentially going after Velus Jones?
Yeah, they didn't waiver claim him. So if they do it, they're probably going to do it on the practice squad in the short term, and then potentially bring him up down the line. Yeah, he was more of a return guy. He's on the older side for sure. Like he was waived, so he still doesn't have his four accrued seasons, but he's like 28 years old right now.
He is 28.
Yeah, he was, you know, he got the COVID year, all that stuff. He was at USC before Tennessee. He was first team all SEC, special teams returner. He was a, I think he was returner of the year in the special in the SEC too. So he does that job well. The problem is, you know, he got drafted by the Bears in the third round, and they were hoping that he would be a wide receiver for them, and he just ended up being a return specialist for him. So he used an option. And then the other guy you're probably going to talk about is Treylon Burks, who was, you know, he was a kickoff guy his freshman year at Arkansas, former first round pick. Both of these guys, by the way, are guys that the Packers brought in, on pre-draft visits. And those guys usually end up in Green Bay at some point. Looking at you, Josh Wiley, practice squad pickup, looking at you, Darian Kennard, pre-cut down deadline trade, right? Those guys usually end up in Green Bay at some point if they become available. So it's interesting. The wide receiver room is kind of crowded right now, obviously. And, you know, you're getting Watson back now. You're getting Reed back in the future. I don't know how all of that would have to come into play. Again, I think at some point during the season, Malik Heath is not going to be on the 53-man roster. So, you know, you can X out one name from that list, but remember this point in time, because there were returners available. Okay. If something goes bad with the returners, there were returners available. By the way, I've seen, my goodness, last week, the special teams marathon I had to do all over YouTube because people finally wanted to talk about it. Yep. A lot of people were like, the hell does this guy know? Obviously, it's not a personnel decision. Definitely Rich's call that he had the 13th offensive lineman in there and all that stuff. Matt said it again today when they asked him about the block kick and stuff. It's never, we got to coach these guys up better. It's never, oh, we used the wrong scheme. It's always, we shuffled around our personnel. They didn't prioritize it. That's why. And I need you guys to understand that they lost. They did not win those two games, or not the Browns game, but the Cowboys game. We didn't get a win in the Cowboys game because they did not prioritize it.
Browns too, right? Like the blocked field goal at the end.
Yeah, but I think that was just, I mean, one of our starters got pushed back on that one.
Fair.
So I think that's more of a case of guys just not locking in. But yeah, the Cowboys won 100% on having the, again, 13th offensive lineman in the pecking order out there while Elton Jenkins watched the block from the sideline.
It's okay though. They showed him, they released him the very next day, and now he's a Tennessee Titan. So that'll fix everything.
I think he probably, he would have been on our practice squad. I don't think that was a spiteful release. I think that was just, they wanted to get those two.
I think so.
Those two roster spots back open for Watson and Monk.
I'm sure we'll go over this in a little bit greater detail as we get closer, but the trade deadline is upcoming. And I guess more importantly, not even trade deadline, we're seeing trades almost like every single day now, like leading into like every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, kind of leading into a week, we're starting to see these deals take place. Any position, I don't necessarily need you to pinpoint players. If you have them, awesome, by all means.
Defensive tackle.
Anything else that you'd like to see Green Bay pinpoint in some upcoming trades? The name that gets thrown around a lot is Greg Newsom. Do you have any interest in one Greg Newsom from Cleveland? It's a big contract, guaranteed, by the way, because he's on his fifth year option.
We're not going to make a move for a corner.
I don't think so either.
What are we going to do with Hobbs? They committed to Hobbs, guys. And then if you kick Hobbs into the slot, what, you have CV on the bench, who you could argue is better than Hobbs in the first place.
Yep.
And Bullard, your second round pick, is on the bench too. They're not going to do that. I think defensive tackle makes a whole ton of sense, because they just like, and I don't even like, I've seen people joke like, oh, Dexter Lawrence is out there on a crappy two. Like, no. We're talking about totally different things. Like,
yeah,
they just like need a warm NFL body that can be better than Nasir Stackhouse. And they'll be in a much better position. Cause I do think that was another huge factor in that Cowboys game. We talked about it last week. That defensive line was just worn out by the end. They just couldn't get off the field. So many plays that they were having to take on. You have to have a guy that can help you stop a second and five in those type of situations. And Stackhouse kind of proved to at least me that he's not that guy at the NFL level. So I'm kind of like ready to cut bait on. So like if we get to week 10 and he gets pushed back on like a push, the tush push against the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm out. Cut him. What was even the point? This was a dumb experiment. We wasted everyone's time. Like that's where I will be standing on the Nasir Stackhouse situation.
Let's go through this. So who are crappy? All right, the Miami Dolphins, crappy team.
I have a list, Andy. I actually have a list.
I love this for you so much. I should have known. Yeah. If you don't want to disclose, because it's a coming article, you don't have to disclose everything.
No. I'm not going to write the article because I don't. Yeah, I don't care. This was personal own sicko stuff that I was doing yesterday in the APC Slack. I gotta find this damn list. We talk way too much in here. There we go. All right. So here are 300 pounders on expiring contracts on teams that are 1-4 or 0-5 and have played as many snaps as Nasir Stackhouse per game. Do we understand the filters here?
Gotcha. So
it's these guys can play, they're nose tackle bodies, and they're on bad teams. It's Travis Jones and John Jenkins for the Baltimore Ravens. You could argue that is maybe the worst defensive tackle pairing in the NFL right now. The Baltimore Ravens cannot stop a cold. DJ Davidson from the New York Giants. I am unfamiliar with his game. But Nito Jones for the Miami Dolphins, who used to be good. And I know his PFF numbers are bad, but I don't want to speak out of turn. I haven't seen the Dolphins that much this year. Those are all four of the players that fit those filters. So those are kind of our options right now if we want to really go bargain basement on this.
I have another name for you just off the top here. I got to double check to make sure that I'm right on this. And I am. Okay. He actually was traded this offseason already. from Minnesota to the New York Jets. So you kind of know what the going rate is. Harrison Phillips for, he technically he's not 300, he's 295, but he's more of like a run stuffing defensive tackle. He's got 3.7 million cap hit this year. So you probably cut that down based on the, you know, you just kind of split it in half or whatever because of, you know, how many games he's played already. So let's say it's around more like 2.8 million, 2.9. And then next year's cap is 7.5, but it's fully non-guaranteed because any signing bonuses would have been paid by Minnesota on that trade already. So the, you it's basically a team option next year for 7.5, 3 million. And the trade at the time was a, what, a 2026 sixth and a 2027 seventh. For, but it was a seventh round swap. So basically a sixth round pick for Phillips. That's probably now like a seventh because he hasn't been super great and you get him for less time. So that would be one other name I would look at.
You could. That's, I didn't have him because he's on a multi-year contract. So I just figured usually the guys that teams dump are just guys on expiring deals, right? Like Clowney and stuff like that at deadline last year. Yeah, he certainly would be an option. I did the math. It's like 2.6 million that would end up hitting the Packers cap. Assuming that he's going to hit his per game roster bonuses and stuff like that, which he's been doing this year. So
yep,
he's an interesting one. There's one in Jacksonville. Let me pull up who it is. Buddy, I've made calls. You talk about I am concerned about this defensive tackle room and have been since August. And I want that on the record. Kalen Saunders, you remember Kalen Saunders who played with the Kansas City Chiefs?
New Orleans Saints.
He's been he's been a healthy scratch for the last four games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So maybe you want to call them and be like, hey, if you aren't using him, we could really use a Kalen Saunders just to eat like 30 snaps a game and not be complete dog crap.
Wonder if he hasn't played a ton. Another one would potentially be Mike Pinnell in Cincinnati, former Green Bay Packer, 6'4", 332. He's played okay so far in Cincinnati per PFF, 62.1 grade. Yeah, that's kind of just what I'm looking for. Just somebody that's average. He's played 100 snaps already.
Yeah, we're not talking about all-stars here. We're not going to trade a second-round pick for a defensive tackle. Like, it's going to be one of these, like, sixth-for-seventh pick swaps and just, like, just give me the player. Just give me the player. I need a warm body. Like, that's what we're in the market for, I think.
I'm in. I'm in on pretty much any of these options. Just a vet, 320-pounder that can go in, stuff the run a little bit, do some heavy lifting, get the heck out. That's all. Howard Green is what we're looking for, Justice, in that Super Bowl run. Like, that's all you're looking for.
We found ourselves in the same spot, haven't we?
Very much so.
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah, it very much is. All right. So trades, we kind of went over So the other one obviously would be like offensive line. Any interest in adding any depth to the offensive line?
No, cause guys are coming back. Zach Tom has played one snap in the last three games. Aaron Banks hasn't finished the game this year. I don't think that we're going to make another move on the offensive line. Like, guys are coming back. If guys start dropping,
If there's like a Jared Belgier type situation where they could pick up like a veteran swing tackle for like nothing just to add as like the ninth offensive lineman, something like that, I would probably be in on something like that, but I'm with you. Probably doesn't need to be a trade.
Yeah. I think the only move that this team has to make right now is defensive tackle. Cause who knows what's going to happen injury wise down the stretch. Keep your options open for that. Like, God forbid we lose. Like, if we lost both of our corners, like, let's say, like, Hobbs gets hurt again and then Nixon gets hurt, right? We're immediately into, we got to at least add a corner. You know, if it's not a guy who's pushing Bo Melton, if we have to have at least an option after Bo Melton, because we don't think it's Kamal Haddon based on
Kamal Haddon season. Kamal Haddon season at that point.
Yeah. We'll see. So, I think defensive tackle is really the only one that. It's the spot where they can get the most improvement from, or just even adding like one of these expiring veteran contracts. You could really help the team moving forward. Cause this was a concern of mine in weeks 1 through 3, but I mentioned it like it hasn't come up yet, right? But when one of the defensive tackles drops, it's going to get real thin at the defensive tackle position really fast. And we saw that with Stackhouse last week. So, yeah. I mean, hey, give Brinson the shot, right? This week, have at it, buddy. This is your opportunity. If you can convince us, you can be the defensive tackle four, and we can just healthy scratch Nasir Stackhouse on game days instead of you, then you get the job. But if he can't go, then it's probably a I would think the team would start looking at the defensive tackle trade market and then the Joker pool stick scene, right? Where cool. You break it over your leg and it's like Stackhouse or Brinson. Only one of you are coming out. We're not rostering six defensive tackles on this roster as it stands.
All right. I know your criteria from earlier, but this dude I'm about to talk about is playing out of his damn mind right now. Even the team sucks, probably wouldn't do it anyway, but he's 30 years old. He does have he's under contract next year as well, but it's reasonable from a acquiring team standpoint. Bunch of dead money. It's what?
Calais?
It's not Calais. That's a fun one too, though.
Calais is one where I'm like, yeah, bend his ear and be like, yo, hey, come here.
Yeah. You want to play for a contender? Yeah. Cleveland Browns, Malik Collins, who has been just out of his freaking mind. Playing
really well.
Yes.
Really, really well.
6'2", 311. Like just playing some of the best defensive tackle football in the league. If Cleveland's like, he's 30 years old, he's got a year left under his deal. And they're like, he's clearly not in our window. What's the most you would give up for Malik Collins?
Man, I don't.
It's hard because
like a fifth. I don't think you can give up more than a fifth because they're going to need these picks, man.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, well, I think they are going to say no because they're beholden to Myles Garrett right now. And I think that's why they've made a lot of these quarterback moves too, where they're like, dog, we promised this guy that we were going to contend. I don't know why we promised this guy that we were going to contend. We obviously were not going to contend. So if we start selling the buddies who are lining up right next to him and are playing really well and are overperforming their contracts, what is that going to say to Miles, right? And are we going to have another headache on our case going into this upcoming offseason? So I just don't think the Browns are really going to do it.
We throw on Malik Willis, tell him he's got a quarterback finally in Cleveland and they can go out and actually win football games. There, problem solved. All right. As we look at the state of the NFL going into week six, Packers are 2-1-1. They have the ninth best winning percentage in football at 2-1-1, despite only winning two of their four games. They are third or fourth, I think fourth, in Super Bowl odds per most Vegas sports books, which is really remarkable, all things considered. What are your thoughts just kind of on the state of the league right now and where the Packers sit in the state of the league right now?
I think there's a lot of one score games right now. Like you could look at, like the Rams have lost two games. They've lost both games on blocked field goals and punts, right? You could look at the way Seattle's lost. They're 3-2 also. And it's end of game stuff. That is wonky. I think it's a lot of sloppy early play in the NFL in general. This year more than most, even though we're accustomed to, you know, seeing September as the extension of the preseason since the 2011 CBA and all that stuff. And fewer and fewer guys who have been through those training camps and banked those reps from before the practice rules changed are now, you know, getting pushed out of the league and all that stuff. I just think it's sloppy ball in general. Special teams penalties, I think last I checked, it's like 42% increase, all that stuff. So, you know, the NFL is kind of getting what it wants, which is, you know, lead changes and, you know, drives at the end of games that decide the result of the game. But I don't think we're getting good information on who the best and worst teams in the NFL are right now, because I don't think that there's any that are like head and shoulders above. I think if you're counting week two on, you know, if you had blinders on that week one slate, you'd probably say the Detroit Lions are playing the best football in the NFL right now, honestly.
Yep.
But their offensive line was all jacked up from, you know, their first actual game together. against the Packers. So does that game count? Does that not count for the evaluation standpoint? It obviously counts in the standings. But moving forward, it's we've seen so many highs and lows from both the teams at the top of the standings and at the bottom of the standings. That's hard to kind of figure out, like, what are you, right? Like, just think of the Packers, right? Like, the Browns game, they can't score any points. They could stop everything. Immediately after that, Cowboys game, just like fireworks on both sides. You can't stop a nosebleed once Devontae Wyatt goes down, but you can score a ton of points, right?
Yep.
It's just like, well, which one is it? So, yeah, I don't think teams are playing their best football this minute.
Everything seems very Jekyll and Hyde at the moment, of just like, you don't know what you're going to get. Also, I don't like the fact that special teams feels more important than ever. And that's just not a good thing. If you're a Packers fan, it's never a good thing. I need special teams less important, Justice, not more important.
And now we're getting all this stuff where like people are talking about, like, they're like, you know, we're allocating more practice time to like the return game on kickoff return and kickoff coverage and stuff like that. So we're spending less time on, you know, field goal and stuff, but teams are still practicing field goal block, right? So that's one reason people are saying we're getting so many punts and so many kicks blocked. I don't know if that's true. The ball isn't going to impact that, but the ball is, you know, probably adding like 5 yards on a lot of these kicks, both in the punt game and the field goal game. So yeah, we're in a weird spot in the league. It's not a good position to be a draft and develop team. And here we are. Did you see my article from earlier this week on the special teams?
I did.
Buddy, we are like by far the worst team in the NFL in special teams since 2005. Like, it's not close. Like, the difference between us and 31st is like the difference between 31st and an average team. It's not good.
The funny thing is that was a very well-researched article. You probably didn't even need to do any of it. You could have just said it and nobody would have looked it up and been like, yeah, no, he's
but I
wrong.
Wanted the numbers because sometimes people are wrong. Like, people bring up like penalties and special teams this year in Green Bay. And I'm like, guys, like, we don't have that many penalties. Like, I know it seems like a lot. But league, like, relative to the rest of the league, like, I don't even think we're in like the top 10 anymore.
We did it.
Hang the banner. Yep. But as far as, you know, like special teams, I did the Rick Gosling numbers because he's put it in public. He's done it over years and years. Right. So I wanted to look and I wanted to see, like, okay, when Ted Thompson took over the team, we reestablished draft and develop, what happens from there on? And it's just basically been all bad on special teams since then, which makes sense because we're doing things like giving developmental reps to Brant Banks as the 13th offensive lineman on field goal protection. We're doing things like getting Savion Williams and Matthew Golden reps on kick return and punt return when it's obvious that Keyshawn Nixon is a better option, right? But then you look at the teams that do well, and it's very funny because it's a lot of the examples that I've brought up in the past. It's the Baltimore Ravens, who are coached by literally a special teams coordinator in John Harbaugh. Yep. It is the New England Patriots, who have been the polar opposite of a draft and develop program, right? Like, a second round pick isn't producing going into his sophomore season. Bill Belichick was going to cut that guy. It's not going to be in Green Bay where it's, hey, we got to give him. Like, Luke Musgrave doesn't make that Patriots team year two, right? He's here year three in Green Bay. And then it's the Seattle Seahawks, who I kept bringing up as an example of, like, Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman were, like, playing punt jammer on Super Bowl teams. Like, don't tell me that these guys can't be out there. I've seen it before. So, yeah, it was a good gut check. I think we're going to be bad at this forever. I genuinely think that until the front office starts to care a little bit more. Again, people bring up like Bo Melton, Zane Anderson, all this stuff. Those guys are there to play defense. I don't know how to explain it. Like, Bo Melton is ahead of Kamal Haddon on the depth chart. Zane Anderson is ahead of Ketan Oladapo on the depth chart.
Nick Neiman
on defense. Neiman is the one I will concede that I'm like, okay, But Neiman doesn't return kicks, and Neiman is also not on field goal protection. So he doesn't help you there at all. And he'd never
maybe that's the problem. Get him on kick return team, get him on field goal block team. That's the solution. If you're not having your special teams aces on all special teams, what are we doing? Yeah, I think I'm just with you. And I've said it was funny. Like Nagler and I before the season were doing an episode, and he's like, I think this might be the year we're gonna be like kind of competent on special teams. I'm like, you dumb, dumb man. And like there's no, I'm like, I will never believe it ever. I will never believe ever, ever, ever that the Packers special team is going to be good. And like, until I get to the end of the season and two things, A, they're like ranked in the top 10 and B, still somehow at the end of the year, didn't find a way to nuke the season based off of a special teams play. I will at that point concede that they had a good special team season. Until then, I will never give them anything. We'll be right back.
I feel like I'm not even asking for that much. They have the players on the roster. They have the players on the roster. Like it's not a punt thing. It's not a kickoff coverage, punt coverage thing. It's not that we don't have guys who can rally and tackle.
Yep.
Right. It's that we put our 13th offensive lineman on the field goal protection unit and that we're not using Keyshawn in the return game. That's it. That would solve everything, like every issue that we've had this year with special teams other than penalties that, again, like we're not even leading the league in that number or anything like that. We're not disastrous in that aspect. Or the block in Cleveland, because that was just an issue of a guy taking a snap off when he didn't need to take a snap off.
Yeah.
That's how you solve it. And Matt went up to the podium. Like he's gone up to the podium three different times and been like the field goal thing. That was a protection or that was a personal issue. We fixed it. And people are still like, it obviously wasn't that. It's that draft and develop is so deeply ingrained in this team. It's that.
Hopefully. Like now they'll get it right and they'll still allow blocked kick this week is probably the next thing. So, but I think you're right.
I want it on record. The next F up, it's going to be the Matthew Golden muff that hits his teammate's calf. And I get to say, I told you so the whole time. And Matt's going to go up there and I might go drive to Wisconsin and strangle him for it. I won't be able to handle myself.
The wild thing is I've been at multiple practices where a punt hits the ground and Bisacci is going ape. Like he is going like, why is that punt hitting the ground? He's going absolutely off on the returner of like never hits the ground. The punt never hits the ground. Yet here we are in a regular season where Golden's let it hit the ground a billion times. And it's like, yeah, it's whatever. I don't care.
Oh, by the way, deep research this week, only because it was bye week. I have confirmed Savion Williams has broken the NFL record for the amount of 20-yard touchbacks in the dynamic kick era. No one has ever kneeled out three balls that hit the landing zone into the end zone in an NFL game before the Dallas game. So he does it. He's got the record. It's really hard to find these numbers, by the way, but he's got the record. I figured it out.
Devin Hester still return? What's he up to? Can he still like he'll at least make good decisions and catch the ball? I know that much. I don't know how much he can run, but I
mean, when they throw like Romeo out there, I think he's just back there to catch it, right? So I don't think that they're setting up returns for him. So I honestly like just get a guy who can just catch it on punts. They really should play Keyshawn on a kick return. But if you want to have just Keyshawn out there on punts and all he does is catch it and fair
catch it,
I will live with that. I do not want to see one of these things clip Zane Anderson's calf and then the Bengals jump on it and throw a touchdown to T. Higgins. And now it's like, the lead is at zero with like 1 minute left. We're going into overtime. I do not need that in my life.
You're probably right, though. It probably is going to happen, and it'll be vomit-inducing, and you'll get to say you told us so, and it just seems about right, because that's what the Packers special teams do. They induce vomit. Good times.
It's bad.
Well, on that fun note, Justice.
But we should kick the Bengals' ass. But we should have kicked the Cowboys' ass, and we should have kicked the Browns' ass.
The Browns' ass. So. I don't even want to get into that anymore. Speaking of which, give me your prediction. Bengals, Packers, what do you got?
Give me a 28-14. We build the lead early. Matt steps off the gas, and Bengals score one late.
Yeah, that feels about right. That feels about right. Just barely, or like coming a half point under the over-under
Everyone is mad. It's a waste of time for everyone after probably midway through the second quarter.
Nobody had fun.
Yeah. No. We learned nothing. Like, we don't feel good coming out of this. And everyone's just focusing on the next game. Some injury,
knocking somebody out for 6 weeks. That's going to be important and needed over the next 6 weeks. That sounds about right.
Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Tell me something positive before we can't end on a negative note.
I don't know. Have you seen the clips out of Portland? Have you watched the news? There are people protesting, and I think it's very funny because they're just showing up in like inflatable suits and stuff, and like people with nefarious intentions. In the media space are trying to incite situations in Portland, and people are like, yeah, we're just going to show up and make fun of you then, because it's literally just it, dude. The building is next to like a 4-freeway change right next to the water. There's nothing out there. It's barely in city limits, and people around the country texted me, calling me, is your town on fire? No, dude. There's a guy in an inflatable chicken suit, just like holding a sign and like dancing to music. Like,
was it Rich Passaggio?
Nothing happening here. You know, hey, bye week, right?
A Packer on my plane from Vegas back to Green Bay. I won't say who, but there was a Packer on my plane ride. So hopefully he did better than me at the tables. So that's anything bad.
Back to the sad stories. How much we down?
Nothing bad. Nothing bad at all. More well within the reason for a Vegas vacation. I'll put it that way. Say that again.
What'd we play?
Poker, Paigao, and blackjack. And roulette was the stupid one. Roulette's dumb. Never play roulette. Never ever play roulette.
Did you get triple zero roulette? How many zeros?
Yeah, triple zero roulette.
It's brutal.
I know. We never hit triple zero. We never hit any of the greens, though. We never hit any of the greens.
Yeah.
We were just bad inherently without even needing bad casino luck. So, roulette is stupid. Poker and Paigao, I probably at least broke it on. Roulette and blackjack were the stupid ones. So,
yep.
It's really bad beat in poker. Really bad. Well, mostly bad beat. Had trip queens, pocket queens in my hand, queen on the table. And he had a flush draw, and I was a 67% chance to win the hand and he went all in. I called 67% chance to win, immediate heart. And then just a kick in my groin, even more, another heart right after that. So yeah, that was the real bad beat at the poker table.
All right. We got the bad luck out of our system. That was all September and early October issues.
November, December, January, February are all going to be amazing. We're getting all the bad juju out now.
Yep.
And then we're saving all the turnovers and good special teams play for January and December. December, January, February.
We need it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Justice, appreciate you a ton. Go follow him on social media at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. Anything else to plug?
No, that's where you can find me, man. So I'll be writing about this team over there. Hopefully we got some interesting things for you guys. I'm trying to think of what. Oh, here's a fun one. You know who the referee in this game is?
Oh, no. Cleet Blakeman? I don't even know. Who is it?
Brad Allen. You know who that is?
Doesn't he throw like a ton of flags?
So he was the guy who was the top ref on the Packers-Eagles game where Keyshawn Nixon got the helmet-to-helmet, didn't get it called. Fumbled, covered his own fumble, and they still said Eagles ball. So, big bum play I'll probably write that up.
He'll make it up in this game once the Packers are already up 42-7, and then he'll give him a bonus fumble recovery or something when it's completely not needed.
I'll take an easy win. I'm in the mood for an easy win, Andy. I'll do it.
All right. Deal. Well, I'm going to be in the stand, so I'll do everything I can. I'll yell down to Matt if anything's going wrong. Again, follow him on social media at JUMOSQ, Acme Packing Company. The whole team does such amazing work. If you're not checking them out daily, you're doing it wrong. Find me at Andy Herman NFL, of course, at Packaday Podcast as well. That's going to do it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Pack-O.